Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and welcome to the program. As always, I am joined by my very excellent panel. From the City of Angels, we have well-known and well-respected attorney Peter Haven. Peter, welcome.
Well, thank you, Simon. Thank you very much. It's great to be here. I look forward to another great day of discussion.
Any really cute legal stories for us this week?
No, not much to add in that front, but I'm sure I'll think of something as we go along here today.
Okay. From the very center of the universe, Youngstown, Ohio, we have author, activist, and bar owner Sam Moffey. Sam, welcome.
Oh, Simon, thanks for having me here. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm looking forward to another great show, solving the world's problems, and then enjoying my taking my wife out for a bottle of wine and some appetizers.
By the way, Sam, what happened to the Indians? You were all hyped last week.
Yeah, they it's called, as my nephew went to the game, lack of clutch hitting. And gets you every time. And however, as Peter would be happy to point out, the Browns are actually in first place in the AFC North, which
best
is a shocking thing for all of us. And my wife, being a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, showed me the sports section turned upside down, and the Steelers are in first place.
Okay, but so are the Indians in the playoffs or not?
No, it's a one and out. The wild card. It's a one and out, so one and done. They were done and they're out, and that's it. You know, the Tampa Bay Bucks are in, and they're playing the Red Sox. I think they slobbered it on Friday. But the good news is the Pittsburgh Pirates, who haven't been in the playoffs for a long, long time. If those of you are baseball fans, I urge you to watch a Pirates game at home. It is the most underrated ballpark if you love baseball and baseball stadium. PNC Park in Pittsburgh is just a beautiful place to watch a game. And I wish the Pirates the best of luck because, oh, boy, those fans, I mean, they haven't had a winning season since 1982. That's a long time. And it's a small market, and they've been able to keep that team there. So bless the fans.
Sounds a bit like the Chargers. Okay. Also joining us from the wilds of New Jersey is my good friend Bill Conrad. Bill, welcome.
Hello, it's good to be here. I think this is going to be a good show. I'm looking forward to it. It's a little gloomy here, so I want to bring a little sunshine out to the rest of the country from here.
Okay, now, New Jersey was the backdrop for that wonderful movie, The Toxic Avenger. Are you going to have some Toxic Avenger type trivia for us?
I don't know. I'll have to look it up a little bit. But it's absolutely not like what you saw in the Toxic Avenger. It's a really nice place to be. It's a lot like Youngstown, Ohio.
You poor guy.
If they took down all the state signs, you would swear you're in Ohio, you know, no question.
Peter, are you as scared as I am?
Of what exactly?
New Jersey and Youngstown, Ohio.
No, I love those kinds of places. The last time I went to New Jersey, only thing I could think of was why they called it the Garden State, because it really is a lush, beautiful state. And everybody I meet from Ohio, I just think they're fantastic. So no, I don't. I like these places a lot.
Good Lord, you sound like a politician.
I would be a terrible politician. I couldn't get elected to anything to save my life. But
So on the subject of politicians, let's get started. This obviously came as no big surprise to anyone that has an IQ larger than their hat size. The government has moved into pseudo shutdown mode. Sam, I have to ask you, has the GOP just put themselves in cruise control?
Oh, that was a good one, Simon. All I know is I woke up when the government shut down and I checked to see if my toilet was still working. It still works. That's all I really care about. The lights are still on. The government has shut down many, many times throughout our history, and life has gone on because the essential things that are mandated are still going on. For instance, I had I have 5 employees who work for me. I withheld their taxes on Friday. I sent their taxes, theirs plus mine, that's double tax, to Washington, D.C. to fund the mandated services. So life goes on in the federal government. It's a big, bad institution. And as a matter of fact, the President of the United States said it's the largest employer in the world, and right there tells you the story, that the fact that our federal government, or government, is the largest employer in the world is dependent on tax dollars to keep it afloat and fees and all those other things. It's really not shut down. It's a bunch of baloney. It's a bunch of malarkey. Non-essential employees are getting paid. Every day we see the GOP-led House will need no government to fund them. The president signs it, and lots and lots of people are becoming non-essential. So the government is not shut down, because if it was, I wouldn't have to pay taxes or withhold taxes for my employees. So that's all a big government of both parties, mumbo-jumbo, hocus-pocus type act to get people scared. So that's how I feel. Is it on cruise control? I do like that, Simon. That was good. I think anything, good or bad, I don't know what's going to come out of this. People look for leadership, okay? And Ted Cruz has emerged as the leader or the spokesperson of the pro-government, the anti-government shutdown. Because if you listen to, I just briefly read a speech with him today that he gave in Virginia yesterday or last night at some group. He even attacked members of his own party. If you really listen to him, and of course the media that doesn't like him won't play that, he attacks the Republican status quo. I mean, for him it's a bigger issue. Whether you like him or not, at least he stands up for what he believes in. You know, there's a lot of liberals. Like, I don't like Bernie Sanders' politics, but I respect the hell out of the guy. That's the socialist from Vermont. And he's a socialist. But you know what? I know where Bernie Sanders is coming from, and I can respect that. And so I think you have to do that. I think the key guy here who isn't doing anything and is playing politics is the President of the United States. He of all people should be sitting down with the House and the Senate, lock themselves at Camp David, and come up with a deal. Come up with a grand bargain. I mean, come on. Don't rely. You know, he's the man of the hour right now, and he's playing politics. And he doesn't need to be. He's not up for re-election. And let's face it, as we talked about last Saturday, you guys talked to my wife, our health care went up. Most people who have been able to get on lying about Obamacare, finding out it isn't for free, it is expensive, there's a lot of kinks to get out of the system. They did not get they didn't make it work. They're 3 years to make something happen. It's still a mess. It's a work in progress. I think Cruz and Republicans do have a good point on that. Let's go back to the drawing board. Go to Camp David, Mr. President. Bring the Republicans, bring the Democrats, bring the consumers. Leave the insurance companies at the door and come up with a better plan.
And actually, you know, Camp David is quite plush. I think it would be better if they all spent, you know, some time at Gitmo.
And waterboard the son of a bitch. That's not a bad idea either.
Peter, what are your thoughts on this not quite government shutdown?
Well, my thought is that I don't think that it's had any kind of catastrophic effect yet. I think there are marginal effects, and I think that some of the little guys are getting squeezed right now, and I think there are impacts at low levels and minimal levels. But if it drags on and if it gets into critical areas, then obviously, obviously there'll be more hell to pay, so to speak. I just think it's difficult that there's any kind of government shutdown over legislation that's been passed
is
by
that,
Congress.
Is that John?
Hold on for a second.
Well, they must, obviously they know I'm speaking, so that'll set them off every time.
I guess they miss you or something.
No, I think they think it, I hurt their ears.
And Bill, are you affected at all by the shutdown or slowdown?
Not too much at this point, but I know that when it comes to the health insurance, it's going to be all crazy because all the numbers are going to change and what you think you're going to have to pay, you know? One of the more interesting articles I read this week was from the New York Magazine. There's a guy by the name of Jonathan Chait. He called the shutdown as being equivalent to the Cuban Missile Crisis. That he used words like a single blunder could have unalterable consequences. If they raise the debt ceiling, we're in trouble. And
I'm sorry. I just want to tell you I'm back. The NSA left.
Okay. They're such nice people, too.
His name's Bob. He's on furlough. I had to give him His name's Bob. My NSA agent is Bob. My dogs are barking at him. They hadn't seen him. And he needed $5 because he's a non-essential employee.
Right.
All right. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
It's okay.
Carry on, Bill.
Okay, so Jonathan Chait from New York Magazine said that it's like he compared the whole shutdown to the Cuban Missile Crisis because if we do raise the debt ceiling, we're heading for a great recession that's even worse than where we're at now. And secondly, if the Republicans don't back down, we head for a great recession. So I don't know what we're going to do. I think the consequences of where we are really they're forcing both their hands, and I think it's going to hurt everyone in the long run, no matter how we resolve it. If we can't drop down and do something about the debt.
Okay, Sam. This government shutdown and the debt ceiling crisis are really two different things, except they're not. All right, I don't see anyone negotiating. I love to watch TV talk shows on Sunday morning, and I'm hearing the same garbage from both sides of the aisle. He won't negotiate, and the other side says he won't negotiate. This is stupid. We've got hundreds of people in the House. By my guesstimate, each representative gets $175,000 a year, but it's much worse than that. That they actually get about $1 million extra to staff their office and travel expenses. This is nuts.
Yes, I agree. I agree with you. The inmates are running the asylum. You've got basically, they said, 5 million federal employees, 5 million, something like that. I'm off. That doesn't include our elected officials and their. That doesn't include the elected officials. I think it's about 5 million federal employees total, and they are holding 300 million people hostage. They've got 5 million people holding 3 million people hostage, and to their whims. And, you know, we the people, you know, here we go again, we the people. We're going to have to do something about that. I don't know if we can, because, you know, here we are. We talked about this debt ceiling crisis, I think, 3 times in the last, say, year and a half. People said it was coming. You know, some people don't believe it. Some people think it's great that you can max out the credit card because they do it in their own lives and just keep spending and spending and spending. But the only reason we haven't hit financial Armageddon, I think we'd all agree on this, is that Ben Bernanke and the Fed have kept interest rates at non-existent. So people are people who have great money in their savings accounts and this and that, they're not getting any interest on that. The only place to make money is in the stock market, and you have to have a lot of money to invest that, and that's all a bubble. That's all based upon what goes on in Washington, you know, because they know it's all dependent on the how much money Bernanke's got, you know, QE, or which is double speak for printing money. And we're going to have to do something. Now, one of the good things, as I've read, is by the federal government actually being partially quasi shut down, there's less spending going on right now. So that's a good thing, because that's going to help the deficit come down. And I think we all agree with that. That deficit spending is a good thing. Again, one side of the aisle says follow the hell out of what we can spend on programs, spend on programs, spend on programs. No accountability, and that's what they want. And then they make the government larger and more people dependent upon it. And the other school of thought that says, no, we need to scale down. And we've got to live within our means, just like Americans do. We've got to stop borrowing money. We've got to stop this, you know, giving money to people who kick us in the face. I've got to stop this war economy. I'm for that side. I see bad things coming if we raise this debt thing. I think we had Obama in 08, 09 with the financial meltdown. That was the tripwire. That was the canary, the proverbial canary in the coal mine. And we didn't reform. And I'll give you one great example, and I'll shut my mouth while you guys talk. We all know that about the mortgage bubble. We all know that Wall Street, big banks, loan servicers cheated, lied, did whatever they could, and screwed a bunch of people out of their homes. And then they were found guilty of that. They all bellied up to the bar, said, we're sorry. They all gave $1 billion to the government, said, don't put us in jail, don't prosecute us. The government said, great. The federal government took that, didn't prosecute anybody, kicked the money back to the states. The states all propped up their general fund, and not one homeowner who was illegally evicted, foreclosed on, has received one penny from those settlements. And the source of that is Neil Barofsky, who was the Inspector General for TARP, a Democrat appointed by George Bush, fired by Barack Obama, because he said Wall Street got bailed out and Main Street did not. And we haven't learned a damn thing since then, and shame on us.
Well, you know, that whole bailout thing bothers
me. No,
greatly.
The bailout money, too. Right, but that was the time to make the reforms, is what I'm trying to say. I agree with you. It was a bailout. I'm going to tell you something right now. I've heard this from my GM workers that are left at Lordstown, which is one of the biggest of the plants. The Cruz is in big trouble. Oh, not Ted Cruz, Simon. the bubble's going to, GM, you know, the new GM is just a ticking time bomb. Because the sales are, you know, slack. They've done hocus pocus at doing everything. And like I said, Obama came in with the new minister in 08, I think, who said, hey, boy, if there ever was a lesson to, you know, since Herbert Hoover, that we have to reform, now's the time. I mean, and I think the American people would have been behind them, because I knew Wall Street was guilty. And then they started with the bailouts. And they didn't bail out Main Street. And that's the point that Barofsky's making. Main Street has been sacrificed. They kicked the can down the road to 213. They put a little cancer on the Band-Aid. I mean, Fannie Mae still doing it. We all know credit derivatives, the liar mortgages, all that stuff's back. Heck, I drove down the street yesterday. I could not believe the ABC check-catching place, you know, the pay loan, what are those called, paycheck loan places? When it was closed up, I was excited. I go, great. Those loan sharks excuse me a lot of business. You know, and then all of a sudden, I drove back 3 hours later, and it was replaced by get cash for your auto title. So now people are bringing their auto titles into these places, okay, and they're getting an equity loan on the car on top of the mortgage they already have.
Mm.
Haven't we been down this road before and it didn't work? Yes, the answer is. And, you know, and that's what's going on. I wouldn't ask. I wouldn't found out. You know, I said, I've got to check this out. I can't. So this has got to be a Saturday Night Live parody going on here. And it isn't. And we're still trying to get easy money to do all that. And obviously these big people who have the deep pockets to suck the consumers into it and bring them into debt up to their eyeballs are out there preying on people. And it's too bad.
I think that was one of your finest rants.
You
deserve credit. You know, I love to give credit where credit's due. Bill, do you have a little counter rant?
Oh, I do not. I am so much behind him. I didn't even know that those loan offices were starting to use cars for collateral. I think I am just so appalled to hear this that nobody's learning their lesson at anything. This is not good. It scares me.
Actually, the title loan business has been around for a couple of decades.
Yeah, but it's usually been on like property, like land and homes and things like that. But cars now, that's horrible. So what happens if you get into an accident and total out your car and you don't have enough insurance to cover it? I mean, what do they do?
they
break your legs,
collecting.
Right?
Well,
they break your legs.
Peter, you're the legal guy. Do you have any thoughts on this business?
Well, you know, I don't really have a legal thought on this. I just have a political thought. It just seems to me, in the big picture of things, that the Republican Party in the last several years has a bad habit of shooting itself in the foot, in my opinion. And it's becoming a party that is alienating itself, in my opinion, from the electorate, from the American people. Now, I know many people don't feel that way or see that, but I think this whole shutdown business could blow up terribly in the Republican Party's face, because if the shutdown gets worse, if it turns into any kind of crisis, I think the GOP and certain members of it will be blamed for it. And we're talking about holding up government on account of legislation that has already been approved by Congress and affirmed by the Supreme Court. So if that's what this shutdown is all about right now, that sounds like a lot of sour grapes, and it sounds like something that could politically blow up in their faces, in my opinion.
One of the things that I hear all of the time on the TV, you know, the cable news networks, is that it's really not the GOP. It's the Tea Party, that there's this small faction that are basically holding the country hostage. Would you have any comments on that?
Well, if you're telling me that a small faction of the Republican Party, known as the Tea Party, is what's responsible for this, that still sounds like the Republican Party to me. And I don't know, and maybe that is part of the reason why the party is having difficulties or challenges, because it has a faction which apparently has some control or sway within the party that seems to be taking taking the party in a direction that it perhaps ought not to be going. And if that's a problem, that's a big problem, an internal problem, in my opinion, for the party. And I don't know how the party addresses that except to run the risk of alienating members within it or run the risk of alienating everybody outside of it. So I don't know how to balance those risks, but I do know that if there's a small faction in the GOP known as the Tea Party that's responsible for this, then it's still right now a GOP problem.
Sam, I know that you're a Tea Party fan, but do you think that that they really have overstepped the bounds?
Well, I'm a Tea Party fan for the ones who are for constitutional government, fiscal responsibility, living within our means, and that I am not. There is also a fact in the Tea Party that is way religious right for me, and that I do not tolerate at all. I mean, I am more of a libertarian than I am a Tea Partier, so there's a big difference. I think it's a great thing that the Republican Party is splitting at the seams, because those who want a national religion and want to go against the Constitution and want to believe in big government and the federal government should tell us what our sex life should be, don't believe in gay marriage, don't believe in that they can, when the Supreme Court speaks, that it's their right to overthrow it, and they can throw out, say, well, gee, the justice of Taney went against slavery with Dred Scott. Well, that was back then. That's one of the arguments they use about that. I'm not. Roe versus Wade is the law of the land. Deal with it. Obamacare is the law of the land. Deal with it, okay? But they haven't dealt with Obamacare, and I blame Obama for that. Okay, I think I understand why they're trying to defund it, because it is a terrible thing. It is a form of socialized medicine that was written by the Democrats written by the insurance companies for the insurance companies and by the insurance companies and to benefit them. It's not consumer friendly. It needs to be tweaked. So when the Supreme Court said it's the law of the land, Obama should have realized, hey, now I got to get together with this. Now this thing's legal. I got to get the best and the brightest together and come up with a better plan, because as it's written, it's a sucky plan. And I agree with Ralph Nader on that. Ralph Nader said there isn't a line in that bill that makes it easier for consumer. There's nothing in it but money and profits for the insurance companies. And I agree with Ralph Nader. But I am not a firm believer that Tea Party of the religious right. The Republican Party is splitting, and I think it's great. There can be a third party of religious kooks, and they can go think that they can have a national religion Bible thump all day long that they want. And they can go maybe get two people elected to Congress, and those that want to live in the district can go live in that. However, the ones that want to bring down this debt and realize it's now or never, I'm for that, because we can't keep printing and borrowing money. Even Ben Bernanke realizes that they're running out of it. And if something's got to happen, you just can't keep doing this. And God forbid if the Chinese and Russians ever decide to devalue the dollar, to take the dollar off the leading monetary policy, because it'll make the Great Depression look like kindergarten if that happens. And people have to realize that. Some people are blissfully ignorant. They say, oh, this is going to go on forever. The world's going to go on forever. No problem. We can keep borrowing money. We can do surgical strikes. We can do this, be the world's policemen. And we can't. Look how many people are on food stamps. Look how many people are on my daughter volunteers at the local rescue mission. Okay, that's and she said she can't believe the amounts of people coming in there with their families for food. And the kids are malnutritioned. They're not getting anything. They run out of food every Saturday night when it's open to the public. But you look on the media, you listen to the Democrats, you listen to the MSNBCs of the world, read the New York Times and CNN. Oh, the economy's bad. Stock market's up. I mean, these people are not living in reality. And I see it every day. And I'm sure it's in your neighborhood. Peter, it's in your neighborhood. Simon, it's in yours. That we are people don't want to admit the truth. And and people like Rand Paul, people like Ted Cruz, you know, they're trying to do that. Some people just don't want to believe it. They think we can just keep on living the way we have. And under the Bush and Obama regimes, it's gotten terrible. Certain people, look at the gap in the rich and the poor reported by everybody. I'm all for capitalism, but my God, there's no trickle down anymore. I went to my bank the other day, PNC. My four bank tellers right here every day are different. All have their hours cut back. They're now all part-time workers under Obamacare. That's a travesty. This is a country that people love to work. They want to go to work. They're told they got to go work. Now they can't work 40 hours because their employer can't afford to pay for the health care. And I think national health care is a great idea. I don't understand why we couldn't do what they do in Holland, where my wife is from. It works. Other countries follow through. It works. But it won't work in this country because the damn insurance companies and their minions control the politician, and we're all going to pay for it. And that's why Obamacare is a travesty, and that's why I support the it's not consumer-friendly. It's politician-friendly, and it's insurance company-friendly. And if you trust the politicians in Washington, D.C., and you trust your insurance companies, then you're a family of Obamacare. I am not.
Okay. Unfortunately, I cannot get my wife, Jan, on the phone. Because, well, she ripped my head off. But, you know, over the past week, all I've heard from her are stories about, you know, friends and family and Obamacare. I think one of her stories said that insurance rates for one friend of hers are going to go up 80%. I mean, that sucks. And in several other stories she had, you know, were not quite as grim, but yeah, no one that she's talked to is seeing lower premiums, just higher premiums. This is not what the law was designed to do. But that said, it is the law. And, you know, the GOP, by shutting down the government, potentially crippling the government with the debt ceiling, are not going to fare well in the midterm elections in 2014. What do you think about that, Sam?
Well, I think they're putting country ahead of politics, aren't they? If this is all about getting elected in the midterm, then more power to the GOP, because they're standing for something they believe in. If this is about let's play politics, let's take control of the House, let's take control of the Senate, let's find the establishment candidate and let's do things, then that's the wrong thing to do. That's what the Democratic Party's doing. Still choosing to negotiate. The President of the United States, who's not up for re-election, you would think this could be, he could pull a big rabbit out of his hat. But then again, I think about the effed up in 2008 and 2009 because he bailed out Wall Street and GM. So, I think he's the best Republican president. He's more Republican president than George Bush. He kept the wars going, wanted to attack Syria, bailed out Wall Street, bailed out General Motors, and now he's enriched the insurance companies. Who says the Democrats are the party of the rich? The Democratic Party of the poor. The Democratic Party under Barack Obama, Harry Reid, Chuck Schumer, and Nancy Pelosi has enriched the big corporations at the expense of the little guy. You will never hear that from anybody in the media because they can't stand the Republican Party. Because the Republican Party wants to change. The problem with the Republican Party is too many of them are religious kooks. That's part of the problem. That's the problem. If they would get back to what Rand Paul stands for, and other libertarians, a small, responsible government, living within our means, giving more people more power over themselves locally, would be in, they'd be in better shape. But I tip my hat to them because they are not, they think, like I, and I believe this, and my wife does, and many other people, that you keep raising this debt, I'm kicking this can, that I am being an irresponsible father, and I'm being even a more irresponsible grandfather, because I'm going to saddle my grandchildren with debt. God knows, I'll work for corporate China at that time. I'll be dead. I won't care. But at least now, to that point, I'd like to at least make a dent and bring back the American financial institutions and the system that can that are consumer friendly, and you know, and it's not a government of corporations, for corporations, by corporations, but a government of the people, for the people, and by the people. We need to get back to that.
Wow, that second great rant today.
I'm on a roll.
Yeah, I'm going to start calling you Paul Rent.
I say let Sam filibuster. He's doing great.
I'm passionate about this. I worry about the future for my kids.
I can't tell that you're passionate about this, Sam. It's not quite coming through.
It really scares me, guys. The financial.
Well, you know, it does scare. It is all of this is scary, and there were several things you said that I thought were interesting. I thought it was interesting. I do agree with you. I don't agree with everything you said, but I do agree with you that in many respects, Obama appears to be more Republican, certainly, than a lot of Democrats, and possibly also more Republican than a number of Republicans. But he is. I don't think there's ever been a president who's been so hated by one party as he has by the Republican Party. That's my impression. I do think that some of this stuff is scary. I think it is scary. I think that fears of people rebelling against government and not fears, but calls of cessation and separation from government. I am concerned that there are factions that are digging in and they will not budge, they will not move, they will not negotiate, they will not be reasonable. They'll cling to whatever values they have, regardless of whether or not they're antiquated or outdated or minority. And I think we're going to get past this latest impasse, but I do have concerns for the future, a lot of concerns. And it's difficult to see how all of this is going to pan out. But when you start, you know, civilizations, the history of humanity, the rise and fall of civilizations, the cracks start forming within. And every ascension has within it the seeds of its own demise. And I don't want to sound apocalyptic, but you know, we do have stresses and pressures from within, and I don't know how they're going to play out. And it is cause for concern, but the bigger picture is probably all of it somewhat inevitable at this point.
Bill, you've been very quiet. I want to pose a question to you. There's been a lot of chatter, shall we say, you know, about you know who the big boss of the world is, and increasingly the chatter is saying in the next 20 years, China, yeah. Europe and the U.S., they're done. They've run their course. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, I also feel like this is apocalyptic, just like what's been brought up. Don't we have something along the line of October 17 as a magic day in which we're If we don't get this government shutdown resolved, that we lose our ability to borrow. And
well,
you know,
there's actually two things, right? October the 17th is the debt ceiling limit. The government shutdown already has happened. They're both grim. Maybe the debt ceiling is more grim, and particularly because suddenly the government's going to have to decide which bills it's going to pay and which bills it's not going to pay. And guess what? There's going to be hell to pay on a global, a global view. It's ugly beyond my comprehension. Anyway, sorry, Bill, carry on.
No. And so because of that, isn't that going to affect, isn't this potentially the wild card or the straw that breaks the camel's back to make it so we can't, couldn't this help make us dive down to being even further on the list and making China even stronger because of all the property and all the notes that they hold against the United States government? I mean, I think this is incredibly serious. What are we going to do if we can't keep paying our bills? I mean, what's really going to happen?
I'll tell you what my theory is. All right, the bills that aren't going to get paid are going to cause an absolute ruckus. And the next November's election it is going to be very, very interesting. There's going to be a whole lot of pissed off people. Doesn't matter if you're talking Democrat, Republican, or whacked out Tea Party. You know, that everyone's going to have an axe to grind. And I think it was two or three days ago, I saw this great interview with the, quote, man in the street. You know, I don't give a damn, but, you know, we need to just throw the whole bunch out and get people involved that actually give a damn. And I thought that was telling. And I think that's reflective of the man in the street. Sam, would you be in agreement?
Well, I think if you're right, both of you guys have brought up a very good point. The government will not default on 1017. They're still collecting fees, taxes, and all that sort of stuff. They will pay the interest on the debt. They will pay the bill, the things that aren't going to get paid, food stamps, Social Security checks and things like that. The military, however the Obama administration decides to prioritize, will be prioritized. Some's going to get paid, some's not going to be paid. But Simon, if you think there's going to be an election held in November of 2014, if we default, if this thing hits, I think martial law is going to come into effect. I think there'll be so much ruckus happening, you're right, that will lead to martial law.
And don't you think that there's going to be such a strong confirmation that the electoral party is just going to be scrapped? They're going to have to do that because people won't stand for it.
Well, we're going to hit. It's going to be an economic Armageddon. Do you realize right now that what was passed under it's been around for a while that when if we they can come and seize all our bank accounts right now. Not, they can seize all the 401k. They can seize all the money. It's been, they passed all this stuff. They, why do you think the NSA is so important? Now, I'm going to sound, you know, crazy, kooky, and all that stuff. They know where all the money is, and then they're going to go grab it. They'll seize the natural money. They have to keep this monster going. And unfortunately, like me, I said, no, it's time to kill this monster and start all over again. Does it mean throwing all the bums out? I don't know. I mean, you know, I think we almost need a 12-step program for our government. It's hit rock bottom. It's time to recover, and we've got to get a better country going out of it. Unfortunately, there's going to be a huge amount of pain in the short run. That's why 08 and 09 was a real missed opportunity. A real missed opportunity. I personally believe when they started talking bailouts, I actually thought they were going to bail out the American Main Street. That would have been a better thing. Anybody who knows economics, you know, people disagree that the best thing to do would have been to put the money in the people's hands, let them pay off their own debts, let them pay off, let them go buy things, let them go invest. Then the country would be booming. We'd be so, if they took all that money and gave it, instead of giving it to GM and let GM die and all the Bank of America and AIG and all those companies die because there are other companies out there that had minded their P's and Q's and would have just gobbled up those assets and given people, like paid off, you know, given them the money. They gave free money out to Wall Street. Why not give it out to everybody on Main Street? This country and the world economy would be going gangbusters. Because we would have done stuff with our gift. We would have paid our debt. You would have had. You went out and bought a. You would have went out and maybe had an addition done to your house. You would have hired something. You would have done things. You would have went on vacation. You would have spent things. That would have kept the local. It would have been a great thing economically. Because people would have done that. They'd have more money in their pocket if they would have paid off their mortgage. But instead, we gave all the money to the top heavy, and they haven't done anything. They haven't invested it. All they've done is buy more stock market, more bonds, more this, and made themselves wealthy. What does Wall Street do? They manipulate wealth. They manipulate money to make money and pay themselves huge bonuses. I still believe that here we are 5 years later, and we didn't storm Wall Street and hang those son of a bitches. We bailed out these companies, and they gave themselves millions of dollars of bonuses. And our government was the getaway driver in it. It still boggles my mind.
It boggles my mind. Now, in your opinion, what would have happened if the feds had just said, well, stupid you, you know, we're not giving you a dime? I can guarantee all of those companies would still be in existence, but they'd be a lot smarter. No, we just bailed them out.
The white collar, there'd be a lot of people in white collar. Bernie Madoff would have a lot of roommates. That would have had to happen too. A lot of people would have had gone to jail, rightfully so. Including a lot of politicians, okay, including some Secretary of the Treasury and people of that nature, and a lot. But that wasn't going to happen. So we did not. And GM should have went. They should have let GM fall apart. Ford would have gobbled, and Chrysler should have went too. Ford would have gobbled it up. Maybe Mercedes-Benz, maybe Toyota. They weren't going to. There were good assets there. They would have bought them up just like any bankruptcy. Why was this bankruptcy any different? To save the UAW, so the Democratic Party could use them some more. That's what that was about. We all know that. We're not dumb. We're not stupid. Don't insult us, Democratic Party, by telling us GM had to be saved. You know, no, you saved it to save the United Auto Workers. And then you went ahead and annihilated the United Auto Workers. The United Auto Workers at Lordstown, where I live, okay, they shut down a ton of plants, the old GM. The new GM opened up the non-Ted Cruz mobile, like that, Simon, and put them in the Lordstown, okay? That was going to be the new car that was going to save the new GM. Those workers came from all over America because they shut down 16 to 18 plants. Those workers are making 30 to 40 bucks an hour up until 2 years ago. You know what the new GM has done? Wiped them out, bought them out, bye-bye, goodbye, made them take early retirement. They have been replaced by people making $12 an hour. Okay? You can't make it on $12 an hour in today's world. I'm sorry. I wish you could because of the cost of everything. So they're making. So that's what they did. That's what the plans. That was in the plans. I've had head of the union, head of the local union, tell me that they got screwed and they didn't know it. And you know, and that because the whole idea was to save GM. Okay, and the same thing in Wall Street. You know, you see that they wanted, and all those guys did it, take bonuses. All that taxpayer money, those AIG bonuses, it should, you know, why didn't you give that money to the people? Well, you know, who could have done, like I talked earlier, could have done great things with it. And like you said, Sam, we've learned our lesson. Now we can get an equity loan, so I can get a third mortgage on my car title if I want at 27%. Boy, does Maya Lansky wish she was alive now.
Bill, do you have any anything to add?
No, not really. It just feels like we're at the end of everything, and I would really like to get on to something cheery like things going on in the raiding Somalia and Libya or something that's a little more cheery than the American economy.
Great.
You think that military violence is more cheery than the economy? That's a sad state of our affairs.
It's like when you're watching CNN and Fox News Network, and it's all fluff news, and you say, "Wow, nothing bad is happening in the world. This is a great day. I want to know, you know, what's a good way that I should cut my hair in order to be successful?" And that becomes the top news story leading for the hour. That's a great thing. So let's talk about war.
Okay. You know, I'm always open for, you know, a good discussion. So let's talk about, you know, foreign affairs, Somalia and Libya. You brought them up, Bill. Why don't you put your bill to the floor?
Uh-oh.
That'll keep you from raising a new subject.
Yeah. Well, we're back after Al Qaeda, and it seems to be it's the right thing to do, and I'm not sure why we're doing that, but the reasons they bring up are obviously not quite clear, other than to say, well, this is just against global terrorism, but there's something else that's going on there, and I haven't been able to get through the onion to figure out why these attacks are so focused. Is it because we're trying to get the focus off of what took place in Kenya and what's going on in the United States? And am I just been duped into wanting to look more into this? I don't know. Right. I think there's something they're not telling us.
I loved your comment about the onion. I will not say more than that. Sam, what do you think about the two minuscule raids?
I think that one of them was a success, from what I was told, read on the BBC, and one of them was repulsed. Again, it's kind of sketchy information. I think they raided the one in Libya. They got some terrorists that they wanted. Now the Libyan government's all pissed off because how dare a bunch of, you know, how dare we come and do that? Who is the Libyan government? I'm still trying to figure out that. So who cares about that? But obviously the guy was wanted for a terrorist. But he's a wanted terrorist. They wanted him for, I think he bombed the Libyan and Kenyan embassy 15, 20 years ago. He came back into Libya because of, you know, Libya, Gaddafi wouldn't let him back in. Now he's in, obviously they got him. And that's a good thing if the guy's guilty of that. You know, it's too bad it takes 20 years to catch these guys. But they got them. Better late than never, as they say. The one in Somalia was a
All right, but let's play devil's advocate just for a moment. Let's say there's a U.S. citizen living in New York, and Libyan special forces, come rolling in and grab him. Can you imagine how excited the White House would be?
I don't think that ever happened. You know, of course, you're right. You bring up a very good point. What gives us the right to do that? I mean, especially without the help of the Libyan government. But there is no Libyan government. We learned that. We've learned that already. So I guess they got him, and if he's guilty, he's going to put him I don't know if he's going directly to your favorite place, Simon, Gitmo, or he's putting on trial, or he's put on trial and has his due process. And after if he's guilty, then they hang the son of a bitch, okay? But the one in Somalia, to me, is here we are, the most powerful nation in the world. This is Navy SEAL Team 6, a.k.a. the ones who got Bin Laden, but to be the best equipped, trained, and I have no doubt that they're not, okay? Paramilitary, elitist, whatever we want to say, and they got beat by a bunch of the guys who raided the mall. They got beat back, and that's pretty pathetic. That we didn't even give them enough troops or support. Our intelligence was terrible. With Navy SEAL 16 going in, you think they'd be great? Or is Al Qaeda that strong in Somalia? And this mall attack is just the beginning of something. It's just, again, it's another canary in the coal mine, and we better be prepared for it, and we'll go from there. I don't know. And then again, here we are playing the world policeman. Why are we going after the mall killers in Kenya? Why can't Kenya do that?
Because
devil's advocate, Simon, right?
Right, and I absolutely agree. We can't keep our own borders safe. We can't keep our own people fed. Now, Sam, you are an expert on this government shutdown.
Yeah.
Let me guess. It doesn't affect foreign aid.
No, it does not. And that's not mandated. That's even funny. That's not mandated. That's discretionary spending. And I tell you what, and it doesn't. And also, they called back. I don't know if anybody saw this over the weekend. They originally said, the Pentagon said we're sending 400,000 non-essential employees home. Sorry, you're not getting paid. Saturday, they called them all back.
Yeah.
Then we pull off these two little raids, one successful, one not. That's like saying, take your devil's advocate one step further, Simon, the Chesney and Bauman brothers in Boston. Why didn't the Chechnyans send in their troops, or the Russians send in their troops to get the guy? Why did 20,000 American troops have to go get him? Right?
Right.
Right? I mean, if he's Russian, why didn't we let Putin go come and get him?
But, I'm going to ask the question again. If we're going to shut the government down, why don't we shut down all of the government aid? I'll tell you exactly why. Because none of the money actually goes to the country. It goes to defense contractors. I mean, this is stupid.
I do agree, but Peter, don't get mad, because I think your state is... Got more defense contractors in it than anyone, doesn't it? Defense companies, Southern California.
Well, I'll get right on that and see what I can do about it.
Okay, right now, sue the shit out of them.
I'm gonna get on that state. I'm gonna get on the state from north to south, east to west, and take care of it.
No doubt that you are. I want you to be the Johnny Appleseed of destroying the defense industry in Southern California.
I can assure you that when I walk into these defense contracting establishments and have these meetings that I'm going to get with these high-powered representatives, they're definitely going to listen to me when I tell them we got to dial it down a notch.
Perfect. Okay. But you know, there was a serious side to this. You know, I learned earlier today that the Pentagon has reinstated 340,000 furloughed workers. For what? You know, what are they going to be doing?
Spying on us through NSA. Know where our money is.
Well, hey,
in my case, they're going to come up with nothing.
Right? Yeah, right. Yeah. I'm seriously hoping that they find me some money.
What if we figured out a way to get that the money that's going out of the country to all these contractors and just try to dump it into the hands of middle class America as sort of a discretionary redirection of funds? You know, because obviously the other plans aren't working. So why are we sending so much out? You know, I mean, I understand that you got to have a lot of military contractors in order for them to make some money, but the money's going the wrong way. We gotta fix our economy. We gotta get more people back to work. We gotta actually produce some products that people want and can be used in other areas of the world. And we just don't seem to get it. So it almost seems like all these things that we're doing outside the country are to distract us from everything that's wrong in the United States. And it's really sad. It's, you know, it makes my heart sink. It's just wrong. How do we do this?
Okay. That's a great question. Earlier this morning, I was watching a truly interesting interview. And it all involves a UN resolution to try and shut down the movement of arms between countries. I think something like 153 countries have agreed in principle, and that there's three that haven't. Iran, North Korea, and some other place. But if this UN resolution will never get ratified through the US Senate, because there's so much money in making arms and selling arms. I mean, doesn't stand a cat in hell's chance of getting a U.S. stamp of approval. And that makes me sick, actually. I'll just shut up. Peter, did you catch that story?
Well, yeah. I mean, everyone is basically saying the same thing in different ways. And what everyone is basically saying is that people are inherently greedy, and the people who make decisions supposedly satisfy their own personal interests first, and they don't care as much about the consequences of other people or what's best. They just basically take care of themselves first. And if there's a chance for policy or legislation to be implemented, and whatever constituency or faction you want to attribute it to, if they're able to make a strong incentive for the policymakers to rule in their favor, people seem to believe that that's what happened. And you know, you could talk about changing government. You can talk about replacing elected officials. You can talk about rebooting the system. You can talk about anything. But ultimately, at bottom is a problem with human nature. And there's no guarantee that the next set of elected officials won't do the same thing. And it's a problem that's endemic in everything that affects us today. I mean, businesses manufacture products that aren't good for us because it's in their profit motive to do so. Apparently, people aren't happy about the flow of dollars out of the United States into the hands of other nations and peoples from other countries. But the problem apparently is because the people making those decisions have financial incentives to do so. On and on and on and on again it goes. And I honestly can't even begin to figure out how to change it or what to be done about it, or if any successive regime or administration will do it any differently.
You talk about giving
people money, giving ordinary hardworking Americans money, and in general, of course, that sounds like a great idea. But what's to say they aren't going to just do the same thing?
Correct. Sam, yep. You're the person that made the suggestion.
I think it's a good suggestion. I really do. I've long said that when financial institutions were getting bailouts, they should have considered eliminating, among other things, all unsecured debt, because if they were going to bail out the banking and credit industries, as far as I can tell, 95 to 99% of this unsecured debt in the country is held by those very same industries. And that, in my opinion, could have been done without, quote unquote, spending a dollar. And it, in my opinion, it could have been a tremendous benefit to the American people at that time, without relieving them of burdens that they're otherwise obligated to pay. I think it's a laudable idea, but again we go back to the same problem: why won't that ever happen? And it won't ever happen because there will be people out there who stand to make a lot of money by maintaining such debt. And they will say, that's un-American. You can't allow people to escape the consequences of their actions and their conduct. And what kind of message is that sending?
Unless you happen to be a bank or GM.
Well, yeah, right. A bank or GM.
Peter, you're absolutely right, but the precedent's been set. They bailed them out, so now they can bail out the people. Maybe that's what's going to happen from this. Maybe the best thing about this debt crisis craziness, maybe that's what we need to do from this radio show and tell everybody, hey, you know what? Screw let's default. Let's bail out Main Street this time. Let's bail out Main Street now.
You can talk about the precedent being set, but the precedent being set and action being taken upon it are two very different things.
I agree. No, I agree with you 100% on that. I agree with you. But I think this time, the tidal wave may be too strong this time. I don't know. But maybe that's our job on this show and whatnot. To say, if we're coming face to face with this economic crisis again, this time bail out the little guy. Bail out the little guy.
You're absolutely right, because if I can just jump in here, if we bailed out the little guy and we put on conditions of the bailout, and maybe those conditions mean that it really hurts his credit rating. It really makes it so those people that got bailed out cannot obtain credit, that you've minimized it so low that these people now have to pay cash. And for a lot of those people, they have to have a clean nose for 5 years, or you come up with all these kind of conditions on why we're going to cancel your debt, and that money is used for the administrative work to help these people get out of debt. So now when they're buying things, they're not buying things on credit. They're buying things with cash. So it's real cash that's moving around that stimulates our economy and cleans up everything. They don't go into debt for all the new purchases, but now they have the cash that they've been earning from their job goes directly back into the economy. Something like that. You know what I mean? I mean, there's a lot of missing points, but if the last bailout for the banks would have gone this direction, we would certainly be ahead of the game from where we are now. We just complicated everything and having no conditions on that bailout.
You know, a lot of people, I tend to agree with what you just said, Bill. I don't agree with all of it, but I agree with the idea about trying to help consumers avoid debt, because I think we've got a double-edged problem. I think we've got a nation that, as a country, has a debt problem, and that's part of the crisis that we're dealing with right now. How are we going to deal with the debt ceiling and funding our government, and how long can we keep doing this? But as individuals, as consumers in our nation, we're also plagued with debt. And I think the nation needs to set an example by trying to eliminate debt, and I think that people need to do everything in their power to eliminate it as well. And one of the arguments that you would hear in opposition to any of these plans to implement some sort of a debt elimination for the average consumer, the average citizen, is people in opposition, a lot like the caller who called in last week, he'd say, you don't need that. You've already got a system in place, and the system is the U.S. bankruptcy laws, and it does everything that you just talked about. The current requirements for bankruptcy are, you know, you can't have had one within X number of years. It does affect your credit rating. You have to go through a debt education class, which is something that I think probably every American should go through, period. It's amazing how much trouble we get ourselves into simply because we haven't been taught certain things. And so that would be one of the arguments in opposition to the plan. I think the counter argument is that many Americans who are struggling with debt do so because they want to avoid the stigma of bankruptcy, and they want to avoid they want to honor their obligations, and some sort of enactment wiping out their unsecured debt would relieve them of that burden, because they actually literally won't do it voluntarily. They'll fight it. They won't declare bankruptcy voluntarily. They'll fight it because they truly want to pay their bills.
Yeah. Yes.
And that's a tragic flaw in human nature, is that the very same thing that these people would benefit by, they fight against.
But why essentially borrow when you know that you're not going to be able to pay back?
Are you talking about nationally or individually?
Both. Uh-oh.
Why do people borrow? Governments borrow for the same reasons that the little guy borrows. People borrow because they believe they need things, and some of these things maybe they do need. You know, you can't buy a home unless you borrow. A lot of people, you can't buy a car unless you borrow. But those are just, two so-called, necessities of life. But there are other things that people feel like they have to have, and they feel that in order to have them, they have to borrow, and it leads to an endless cycle. And and governments are obviously doing the same thing. That's why we have a debt ceiling. That's why we have national debt. People feel like they have to borrow to achieve whatever it is they're trying to achieve. And that's just another flaw in human nature, or a character trait in human nature. And if it's not managed responsibly, it leads to problems.
Peter, let's assume that the government shutdown continues, and on the 17th, we reach the debt ceiling, and now we're completely screwed, shall we say. What do you think will happen?
I have no idea. I think that's a great question. I have absolutely no idea. Are these elected officials after the 17th of October? Are they going to continue to get paid?
That's an even better question.
Will there even be anything for them to do? Will government even exist? What will happen? I have absolutely no idea. It's a lot like when we were. I can't help but think that it's a lot like worrying about Y2K. You remember how everybody was worried about Y2K? And when we were going to hit year 2000, our whole system was going to crumble because it couldn't handle the extra zeros. It was all built on a 1999 is the end limit function. You know, just like the Mayan calendar, it stops, so everything's going to end. So I don't know what's going to happen. I suspect, and my gut tells me, it's not going to be apocalyptic or the end of the world. But I honestly don't know. And at some point, these very same politicians who are shutting down the government are responsible for it being shut down. At some point, it just seems to me they're threatening their own jobs, because at some point, if government can't function, there's nothing for them to do, much less get paid for not doing it.
Yeah, I mean, right now, they're being paid handsomely for not doing it. But, you know... I'm pretty certain that they're going to get grumpy if they don't get paid for not doing it.
Well, I'm sure a lot of them won't let that happen. There are many independently wealthy people, but it's more than just getting paid. What's their job going to be if the government doesn't exist? I don't know. Like, to me, it just doesn't. It's like trying to imagine something that can't be imagined. It just doesn't make any sense. It seems to me it has to end. It has to be resolved. And I think I know where it's going to be resolved. I think I know where it's going to go. But it's as far as a resolution is concerned, but as far as what would happen if there is no resolution, I just have no idea.
Yeah, unfortunately, I already pay... To have the lawn cut and the bushes trimmed, so I really won't be able to offer Boehner any side work.
Yeah,
Sam, what are your thoughts?
Well, the doomsday thing is bad, and I don't think a doomsday thing is going to happen on October 17th, because it's my understanding when I go to the OMB, Office of Management and Budget, I listen to the only person I ever respected from the Reagan administration, David Stockman, talk. He was on the Ron Paul channel. I urge people to watch that, because he gets a lot of people to Ron Paul. Gets a lot of people talk about economics to simplify it, to understand. Every month, the United States government gets $200 billion, with a B, in tax revenue. And it's $20 billion a month in interest payments. We don't make the principal payments. We only pay the interest payments. So, in other words, if anybody out there, you get a credit card, you make the minimum payment due. Our minimum payment due is $20 billion. So we get $200 billion a month in income from the federal government. That's $180 billion left over. We will not default unless the administration decides to default. But now's the time why this discussion is going on, is to reduce the deficit, balance the budget, grow the economy, and stop this crazy, reckless spending that we're doing. We're coming up with great ideas without any idea of how to fund them other than let's print more money. But we will not default unless this administration decides to default. We do have enough money. The question will become how do we start spending that money? I agree with what you guys have brought up. That could be the Armageddon that I fear. If some people want that, they're in control to do that. Our government, we all see the Boston bombing, right? One guy, one little kid in a boat, 20,000 federal people, 20,000 law enforcement people after you. If they, if they decide to use the default as a hammer to declare martial law, to do whatever they want to do, they can do that. Who's gonna stand up against them? You know, nobody can. You can't take them on. You can't take them on. They can, you know, they control their government. They control everything. And all I want to say is, please control the deficit spending, balance the budgets, feed the hungry, help with the sick, pave the roads. Help create jobs. Start spending money. You know, I believe there's enough money in this country, in this world, to solve all the problems. It's just that there's too many sticky fingers in the way.
Okay. All right. Well, we've been down this path before. I'm just really ticked off about Barney. Always have been. Because, you know, not like we're actually helping. You know, all we're doing is giving them access to, you know, arms and Monsanto. I mean, couldn't we stop that? Sam?
Yes. Yes. Need not look any further than the city of Detroit, Michigan. I mean, if you talk about, you know, if ever there was, maybe in 100 years from now, if America ever falls apart like we thought it was going to, what we think it might, use that as your analogy. Detroit was America, and, you know, the big three were there. You know, it employed millions, millions of people lived, not millions, employed hundreds of thousands, millions lived there. Look what it looks like now. I mean, have you seen that classic picture of Hiroshima before, after the atomic bomb, and what it looks like now? Look at Detroit when the atom bomb was dropped, and what it looks like now. You would think we lost the war. You would think the Japanese won World War II. But what happened? And that kind of, to me, sums up that we want America to look like Detroit. And if we continue to go down this path that we're going, we are going to. Oh, there'll be certain, you know, pockets of, there's always exceptions to the rules, and, you know, but that's what we're going to look like if we don't change. And, you know, in every grade, I'm a student of history. I'm sure there's people in Rome who said, don't worry about things, you know, and don't worry about those Christians. You know, they're never going to amount to anything. I'm sure the people in the British Empire said, hey, those colonists, tell King George, don't worry about them. You know, I mean, and I think that, you know, every republic has fallen. That's history. Because, and as Peter, you pointed out, there's cracks within. And we're going to fall from within. And that's what happened. And it's a shame that it might end up into, you can't say civil war. Americans would never have civil war. We've done that. You could never say Americans would have race wars. We have done that. You know, so, you know, we have a history of, you know, the great saying, you know, history is doomed to repeat itself by those who forget it, right? We can't ignore our histories. We have to, the question is the tough thing. Are people willing to make the tough choices? We had an opportunity in 08 and 09. You know, FDR, whether we like his programs or not, saw his way, you know, created, he helped us get out of the Great Depression. Yes, the war, some crazy people will say it was the war only, like our good friend John Perry would say, World War II got us out of the war. That was part of the equation. It was Roosevelt, the WPA, giving people some dignity back, helping things out, setting up the Security and Exchange Commission so Wall Street wouldn't be reckless. Of course, little did we know that they stopped, the SEC meant nothing in the 1990s and 2000s. Well, I saw 08 and 09 Obama's opportunity to be FDR-like with the government to watch, you know, say, hey, guys, let's put our country first. You know that thing that the country, let's put that first. You know, we've got this bubble that just burst. There's five or six others coming down the line because the people who predicted the housing bubble have predicted all these other bubbles that are coming. And we got to do something about this. Here's a golden opportunity to do it. And we didn't do it. So now all we did was really think about it, all our politicians and institutions did was reward themselves, their friends, and kick the can down the road. Now the road, if they kicked the can, it was October of 08, right, when the Now here we are 5 years later, and we're talking about the same damn thing.
Absolutely. But, you know, here's my gripe. You know, why are politicians permitted to, you know, stay in office as long as they are? In my opinion, it should be one, maybe two shots, you're out. Give someone else a chance. That certainly is, you know, what happens with presidents. You know, how about the rest of the assholes?
I honestly don't know. So much is tied up in the concept of inertia, in the concept of the status quo. You know, it is the way it is because it has always been that way. And I don't think it's going to be easy to change. And secondly, there's a theory that, you know, with experience, these guys get better at their jobs. But, you know, you're right. There are problems with them getting experience at making their jobs fat and cushy and as easy as possible and as lucrative as possible.
Now, I know I've broached this subject before. I'm not a constitutional expert, but you know, the way the framers had it, you know, you were working for the people. But these days, you know, it's $175,000 a year, you know, and, you know, plus a million to, you know, have your staff and stuff. You know, I mean, it shouldn't we do something about that?
Do something about what exactly? The amount that these guys are paid or their term limits or both?
Both. All right. You know, I mean, I don't know how much you earn, Peter, but I certainly don't go anywhere close to $175,000. And, you know, no one is giving me a $1 million to fund my staff and all the rest of it. You know, it sounds stupid.
Well, you know, it's a very interesting question because I realized that for many Americans, $175,000 a year is an absolute fortune. But for many other people, $175,000 a year, they would consider that to be little or nothing. And, you know, it's strange the way resources are allocated in our society. It's strange to the way money is earned. There are people, you know, it's football Sunday in America. There are people who are playing football today who will make $175,000 just for the game they're playing today. That's it, just for one game. And there are some of these people who have contracts that are, you know, $20 million a year, whatever, $15 million a year. There are people who work for these franchises who make $175,000, $200,000 a year just doing accounting work or executive type work. That's just one industry. That's just one sector. You look at entertainment sector, you know, Hollywood, how much do actors and actresses get paid for big motion pictures if they're a part of that? Hundreds and hundreds and thousands of dollars, millions of dollars. Those are two sectors. There are people in Wall Street who make massive amounts of money. You know, so when you talk about changing how much money elected officials make, there's a lot of arguments that they have that the money they're making is very little at all. I don't agree with it, but that's their argument. And they'll tell you that if they can make more money in the private sector,
they have a tremendous disincentive to get into politics. And I don't agree with that either, because I find it to be unfortunate, an unfortunate truth that people who are drawn into politics, in my opinion, are unfortunately oftentimes motivated by the wrong reasons. They just like being in the public light. As for term limits, you know, I just think it's going to be very difficult to change those, even though there may be many good arguments in favor of doing it.
Okay, we're just about flat out of time, so I'm going to go around the table and you know, get some final comments. Let's start with Bill.
Okay. Truly, I think we've brought up some really good points at the end. There is no vision. There is no insight that we have on how to seemingly fix the problems that we're faced with. They're so daunting. But frankly, these kind of problems must have existed back in the Roosevelt years and everything else. People looked at them and they came up with unselfish motivation to fix these problems. You know, trying to not oversimplify it, but to look at it, even in the schooling, in the educational sector, why are we focusing on certain parts of history, the dates, important documents, and we don't know why it is. We need to somehow figure out how to re-educate our young people and other people so that they can get a vision to not repeat history and to get us focused on making unselfish decisions for the American people to get us in a better place. I don't know how much we can change with the politicians, but, you know, frankly, maybe an awful lot of the last elections, the reason a person's in the office, whether they were competent or not competent, was because we just voted them out of an office because the guy in office was bad and we've replaced him. We got to do something to try to get people to not repeat the same mistakes of the past.
I'm in total agreement. Peter, your wrap-up comment.
Well, you know, to me, the comment of the day came when we were talking about the deficit and how depressing it was and the government shutdown. And the only thing that we could think of that was supposedly less depressing was talking about war. And I can't help but agree. It's a sad state of affairs, and I'm not sure if there really are any solutions to any of these problems. And unfortunately, after discussions like this, I tend to be a little bit depressed and a little bit fatalistic that there's really no hope for any of this mess. But we'll see if we could solve a few more problems later on down the line. Maybe next week we'll have better news to report.
Right. that was a great comment. And Sam, I'm sure you have something to add.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for the opportunity. It's an awesome to be on the show, to be able to allow to vent and talk and share my thoughts and hear some things from you three gentlemen, and hopefully bend a few ears on the listening audience and they make some listen and try to do something. And I don't think the sky is falling. I don't want to be like Chicken Little, but I don't want people to be blissfully ignorant and think that, you know, things are going to go they're going to keep going up and up and up. They go up and up for a few people. Peter, you just brought up a wonderful point that it's hard to believe that, you know, for most people, the gross $175,000 with the pennies that the politicians get, that would be awesome, okay? But you bring up a great point that there's people in Hollywood, Wall Street, and in the sporting field, they would freak out. They wouldn't know what to do. And that's the kind of sums up how effed up society is. You know what I mean? That the court jesters, the entertainers, are making so much money more than the teachers, more than the businessmen, the small businessmen, and you know, but that's what we do. That's what type of society turned into. We're celebrity conscious. We overpay them, and that's sad. You know, I mean, it's a sad comment on it. But I will say this: if this is going to hit an economic crisis, we go back to bailing out Main Street. I think that's what's going to be my theme from this point on, October 17th, is bail out Main Street this time. Give every American its due, just like you did Wall Street and GM, and maybe we'll never have to go through this again.
Perfect. And I do have to wrap this up. I want to thank my wonderful panel, and we'll be back next week. Well, hopefully, assuming Obama doesn't shut us down.
or that we can keep our heads, our wits about us and not go playing out in traffic because we're so suicidal at this point.
Right.
Or as you said, Phil, hey, pray for more war to give us good news.
Okay.
Okay. We'll be back next Sunday. Till then, goodbye.